after this.
No. Oh, you don't think so?
No, not at all. We were at somebody's house, and they had some plants that died out. The area doesn't drain too well.
Oh.
And the roots were just collapsed. It just mush from too much water.
Mm-hmm.
So, makes a good point. Make sure when you buy a house.
Here we go.
Make sure the house is the highest thing on the property.
That's always a good thing.
What was it like at my house when you left, Larry?
It was getting up there. Yeah, your automatic pontoons deployed.
They deployed.
Yeah, like those airline things when they have an emergency, it all popped out.
Were the cattle getting on 2x2, Larry?
Yeah, the cattle had their bikinis on and their whatever.
Oh,
and all that.
That's
so, Larry,
ridiculous.
I've got. We were talking about my red tip photinas over here at a commercial property we got. And they were coming out, but now then they just look dead again.
Yeah. I like to use photinias not as a hedge. This is not the hedge country for hedge country. Yeah. The main reason is they need good air circulation around them because there's a disease they get. Typically when we have a long period of wet weather or a cold spell in the winter, which weakens the
plants. We've had both.
Yeah. And the disease is called Entomosporium. And it starts in the leaves, and it migrates into the stem.
So should I just take my chainsaw and cut them off right now?
Yeah.
I mean, in the next few days, whenever I can get over there. What do you think?
If you're having perpetual problems with your photinias, you might consider using something else. There's a plant called smoke tree.
Smoke tree.
Smoke tree, which has purple leaves. It's a purple leaf smoke tree. And there's some here in town that are thriving, actually. But they have the purple leaf on them, and they have pink flowers. They're not an evergreen, though, so a little drawback there. They give you the purple leaves. There's also some purple-leaved crepe myrtles, which give you some purple color, if you want something with some color in the landscape like that. And there's also ninebark, which is a big shrub that gives you some color. You can use photinias, but here, use them as a specimen type plant rather than a hedgerow, and they'll do fine. If they're isolated, I have several compositions where we put one photinia off in the corner. I was at their house, her waterfall went crazy.
Just one.
So I had to fix her waterfall well. And there's one behind it, absolutely untouched by the cold, and no Entomosporium at all. So if you do use them, say, at the corner of the house, perhaps, or maybe as a backdrop or something, as an individual plant with a significant amount of space between the two of another photinia, they shouldn't have any problems. It's just our weather here. When it rains, it pours. And when it quits, it dries.
A lot.
Typically. So...
Wow.
So that's a theory.
We don't. We have no moderation here, do we?
No.
It's either really hot or really cold.
Either sit around and do nothing or get out your chainsaws. Yeah.
I know. It's either
no moderation,
or.
Kevin. You have
There's
no moderation.
No moderation. So, and the other thing that I've had, and I've seen others, is my dwarf Yaupon hollies that we use along the front of the house and different places.
Right.
They just haven't come out.
Every year on my dwarf yaupons, I have some that are easily 30 years old. Yeah, don't look at me like that. Yeah,
wow.
It ages me, doesn't it? Yes, nonetheless. And I cut them back every year. Cut them back to where they look like little tiny hat racks.
Well, I understand. I did cut these back, but I think I need to cut them off at the ground.
And I did mine this year also before they started leafing out. Cut them back really, really low, and they came back rather nicely. It took them a while this year because there was some dieback here and there. And I have one in the backyard that I sort of have it trained as a sort of a bonsai-like thing, and it's having a difficult time, but it is starting to recover. So, it was this winter we were on the edge of these plants. Are you going to make it or are you not going to make it? Some of them just absolutely died.
They
some
did.
Some of them did fine, not even affected. There are some crepe myrtles in town that were unaffected by the cold we had. And most of them were affected by the cold.
Oh, yes, they were.
So
yes.
It's odd. Now, if we can come to a common denominator as to why these others survived, we probably can prepare for next year's.
Is there going to be another zinger?
This next winter will be relatively mild. And then we might have a bit more snow. But you remember this time last year, I was predicting a zinger this winter, yeah.
We had a zinger.
By golly, yeah. We did.
Statistically, it was time for a cold spell.
About every 10 years.
If you do the mathematics, it was time for a cold spell.
About every 10 years, we have one.
Yeah. So, anyway. So there. Now, typically, the plants that really survived the cold real well are those which were not subjected to drought prior to it being cold. And usually those had a lot of leaves piled up around them from the wind. They pile up.
Yeah.
And people don't want to get out and rake the leaves in the cold. And they would mulch the ground and keep the ground warm. My elephant ears survived just fine. They're 5 feet tall. Big old leaves like this.
I cut my northern hawthorns. You know, isn't that what they are?
Northern hawthorn?
No, the ones with the pink flowers on them.
Oh, yeah.
What are they called? It's a hawthorn.
Indian hawthorn.
Indian hawthorn.
Yes.
I cut those things off at the ground.
Raphiolepis indica. Did yours make it okay?
They're coming back. They're slow.
They're on the south side of the house.
I know.
They are a member of the Prunus family.
There's some on the north side that actually did better than the south side.
I think that's because all your cows were huddled up over there.
I don't know.
There's something, I don't know, keeping it warm.
But I just cut them off at the ground, and all of them but one survived.
Yeah. That's not too bad for Indian hawthorn. That's pretty good. Most of them didn't make it this last year.
Now, we'll see how big they end up getting again. They were huge.
Yeah. On your dwarf yaupon hollies, give them some iron.
They're dead.
Oh, the ones that are alive, give them some iron.
Cut them off.
Yeah. I give mine iron sulfate every year. And the yaupon hollies, too. It makes a darker green color. Real gross, glossy, dark green leaves. Very attractive.
Mine have brown sticks. Grayish brown sticks.
Well,
that's what they look like.
Yeah, but you're a little further. Your elevation is a little low right there, so it's going to be colder.
I don't know.
But anyway, what I brought up earlier was those plants that had a lot of leaves piled up around them were relatively unaffected. In fact, some people's lower petalum survived that had leaves covered over them. So I think that says a lot for mulch. Okay, do we have a caller?
Well, we're going to see here. Looks like we do now. There we go. And a good morning. Welcome. You are on the air with our Green Country Gardener, Larry Glass.
Good morning.
Hey, Kevin.
I seem to have Japanese beetles on rose bushes and also on crepe myrtles. The first year that I've noticed those, and I'd just like to hear what you have to say about Japanese beetles.
Well, for the live beetles, the spinosad is very effective against them. Spinosad is a bacterial kind of bacterial generated insecticide, and it's very effective.
And that's Captain Jack's dead bug. Is that right?
Yeah, Captain Jack's dead bug, huh? It works very well to control them.
Well, how long will that last? After, of course, I realize it's rained on them. I did spray that with Captain Jack a couple of days ago, and I was still seeing the Japanese beetles, you know, just right after that.
Is there a particular time of day when you see them the most?
Well, I see them in the morning. Actually, I've been out a little afternoon and found them again.
Okay, just any time.
So I don't know that it's any particular time.
Well, it's a contact insecticide. And then.
Oh, okay, it has to be contact.
Uh-huh.
All right.
And then milky spore is what you use for the grubs. And the grub worms are the ones you really want to target. So,
okay, what are you saying about that, and what kind of product would I use for that?
It's called milky spore.
Milky spores.
Uh-huh.
So if I come in and ask for milky spores, I can
I don't know that we have any, but Gary can probably get you some.
Okay.
But anyway, that's the treatment for those.
Well, they are fairly new to this area, are they not?
Yes, they are. We've been kind of an Ezola, if you will, here, as far as the infestations are concerned. They really haven't attacked this area yet too much, but they're moving in, though.
Yeah, what I have found is I can take a bucket with a little bit of water and and a little bit of soap in it, and they knock off the bushes pretty easily, but they keep reappearing. So
yeah.
Anyway, I'll check into the milky spores.
Right. Now, there's some timing involved with that, too, as far as what time of the year you want to apply it. You want to do it when the larvae are present on the ground, and they probably emerged at this point.
So, probably too late.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about systemic. If I treated the roses with a systemic, it's too late for that, too. But if I did that next spring, would that take care of the problem?
The imidacloprid will work against them, but it's not discriminate. So any other insect, bees or anything else, will be adversely affected by that, too. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
All righty. Thank you for calling.
And we have another caller right now here on the Green Country Gardener program. Hi, good morning. Your question or comment for Larry.
Hi. I did just turn you on, so I don't know if you already covered this, but I have a blue spruce, and I went out there yesterday, and it's just covered with these old bagworm things. I picked them off, but I don't know if I got them all. There was a lot of them. So what do I need to spray that with to make sure that I don't get them again so I don't kill my tree?
Last week.
It's not a very big tree either.
Last week I went to a customer's house, and he's out of town. And luckily I went by and saw his arborvitaes were covered in, absolutely just covered in bagworms. And I use BT or Bacillus thuringiensis or Dipel or Thuricide, one of those names, it's all the same thing. And they were gone in 24 hours. It killed them all.
Okay. And, see, I picked them off, and I put them in a sack, put them in the trash barrel, and they crawled out of the sack, out of the barrel, crawling it down the side of the barrel when we went back out there. So I sprayed them with Roundup, and that didn't kill them. And then I got some antifreeze and picked them up and put them in the antifreeze to kill them.
My goodness.
There must have been 100 of them.
Yeah. Anyway, BT is a microbial type there. They have no immunity to it, and it'll kill them. Just
BT?
We have it at the nursery. It's called Thuricide, Thuricide, or BT. BT stands for Bacillus thuringiensis. And it's very easy. You just pour it in a spray container and spray it, and it'll wipe them out pretty quick.
Okay.
But you have to get it when they're young, like that. If they get older, they stop feeding, and nothing will work against them. They've already done their bit.
Yeah.
So,
and they will kill my tree, surely, because it's not very big. It's not even as tall as me.
They'll just, and it's odd how they're doing it this year. They gang up on the one right next to it. These are in a row, and one of them had a really, really bad one. Had a few, and the other one had some more. Then the one to the far right had nothing. So they're very. It seems like they're very specific this year. So.
Yeah.
But when they come out in droves. So, and the BT also has a long-lasting effect on it.
What kind of a moth or whatever it is that lays that eggs for that?
I'm not too sure what it looks like. It's a little gray moth, but kind of a nondescript little thing. But and they lay lots and lots of eggs. So.
Yeah, I know. It was like my little tree was just loaded with it.
So anyway, but the BT works very well. As soon as you see the little tiniest one, you gotta look at your plants every day. Once you see the tiniest little bagworm, you put that stuff on, and it'll wipe them out. Now it you'll have probably subsequent generations hatching, so you need to watch out and make sure you don't do
kinda
it. Yeah, just once.
Once a week or further out than that.
I would go probably about once a week. Yeah.
Yeah, and is there. Is there any kind of a certain fertilizer that would help my tree survive this? It's just blue spruce.
Right. The blue spruce don't like a lot of fertilizer. They don't like a lot of water. Their native habitat is relatively poor, rocky soil. And if you try to butter them up too much, they just don't make it too well. So. You fertilize them early in the spring and then a little bit in the fall. You really don't want to spur a lot of growth, and make sure it doesn't stay overly wet. Watering it is the worst thing.
Yeah, well, it's kind of in the high part of the yard, so it drains good there.
Yeah, that's good. So I wouldn't let it get too dry, which is not going to be much of a problem, it looks like, for the next week. I was looking at the weather forecast.
No, we're not
running
into trouble with that.
And I really wouldn't go overboard on the fertilizer right now, because it's not going to grow any right now. They only grow for a short period of time in the spring. So just a little bit of maintenance, fertilizer maybe, but I wouldn't go all out on it. But by all means, do use the BT, and it is very effective.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Right. Thank you very much for your call. We're going to be right back with more of the Green Country Gardener program and your phone calls at 1-800-749-5936 after this two-minute timeout.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. We have 24-hour service, so if you get a piece of equipment from United Reynolds and it breaks down on you, one of two things is going to happen. We're going to have somebody out there relatively quickly that's either going to get the machine up and running, or they're going to say, hey, this is catastrophic. We need to go get another piece of equipment. We're up here on the southeast corner of Highway 60 and 75, 3801 No Water Road, United Reynolds, 918-333-9580.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters with Bartlesville's largest selection of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants. Green Thumb can custom design your landscape, including installation of sprinkler systems, pavers for walkways and patios, making your yard and backyard the oasis you've always dreamed of. That's Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nawata Road, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. Sunday, noon to 5.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Everyone is talking about healthcare these days. America spends twice that of other developed countries on our healthcare system, yet our health ranks near the bottom. Primary care can help fix the problem. To learn more about the benefits of primary care, visit www.healthisprimary.org. This message is brought to you by America's Family Physicians.
All right, welcome back, welcome back. It is the Green Country Gardener Program. Phone calls welcome at 1-800-749-5936. Larry Glass, our resident expert, pretty good swimmer these days.
Yeah.
You've been out there in the water, the rain, the mud, everything else?
Yeah, I was looking out the window over there. It looks like it's raining down south, but it's not raining here, so.
Yeah. A little bit up there in Montgomery County, Kansas, too.
Yeah.
Looks like they got about an inch. We have a looks like 6.1 at the airport in Bartlesville. Now our folks in Tallulah, they've got 2.75 inches of rain. They got the heavy spot of that thundercell, that's for sure.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I can see it right here on this little radar thing. It's still stuck.
Oh, my goodness.
Somebody tied a big old, Kevin did. He tied a big old rope around that cloud. He wants rain.
I want some more rain.
Okay, anyway, and we talked about bagworms, and tent caterpillars will be coming out pretty soon, too.
Yep.
And the same thing will work for them also. The BT will work for them. And if you do see some tent caterpillars, you want to be pretty quick about it because it's difficult to get the insecticide down inside the tent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tent caterpillars are the ones that get into the pecan trees and some other species of trees like
look
that.
Look all ghosty.
Yeah. Remember about 3 years that you weren't here?
I heard about it.
It looked like Halloween. I mean, it was they were attacking everything. It was crazy. But anyway, they'll be coming up right soon, too, and that's one way to take care of it. Anyway, lawns, watch for maybe a little bit of grubworm damage on your yard, perhaps, here and there. And I'm seeing around the dollar spot on Bermuda grass, too, here and there. Dollar spot is kind of hard to see unless you really look at it. You get these areas where it's just kind of a brownish, but it's not that bad. It's just kind of collapsed tissue, just a little bit here and there. And typically, the infection is about the size of a silver dollar. That's where they get the name, dollar spot. And it's more pronounced if you have a very dense turf, and it forms these little round circles everywhere. It's called
spots
dollar
before
spot
your
disease.
Eyes.
And And guess what? It's caused by warm and cool nights. Yeah, it's spread from one area to another with mowers, equipment, or shoes, or whatever. It gets spread around like that. And it typically is from being too wet for too long a period of time.
Gotcha.
And right, so if you have a sprinkler system, I don't think anybody's had to need it, had to use their sprinkler yet this year.
Maybe that 1 week, and I can't even remember when that 1 week was. I think I was on vacation that 1 week.
I actually watered the rocks underneath my yard for a couple times there, so I watered my yard twice this year.
Yeah.
So far. But anyway, I haven't had to water anything lately. But anyway, dollar spot is characterized by that, and a lot of times if you don't fertilize enough, that that can cause dollar spot to show up. Cultural practices that promote healthy turf help reduce the occurrence of this dollar spot. You want to, in the spring, you want to remove your excess thatch. Mm-hmm. It's called dethatching. It's not necessarily scalping, but it's called dethatch. There's a difference. And keep your fertilizer levels up to par.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a nitrogen applications on a light nitrogen applications on a monthly basis.
Mm-hmm.
A pound of nitrogen per 100 square feet. And avoid frequent and light watering. You want to water a bit less less frequently. In other words, instead of watering, you get your sprinkler timer going. And instead of going Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you might want to go Monday and Friday.
Ah, there you go.
And perhaps ramp up the time quantity a little bit, and make sure your rain gauge is engaged properly, is working.
that's always a good thing.
And another thing to help do it is mow frequently, and as the time progresses in the summertime, you want to slowly raise the grass levels up, so it can photosynthesize and transpire a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll want to aerate your yard if it's really compacted. So there's some practices you can do to avoid dollar spot.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hardly noticeable. If you just come home and you go into the garage door and you go in the house, you don't even look at it except one day a week. but you can have a problem with it. And typically the yards that are not irrigated with a sprinkler system mm-hmm. don't really have much of a problem with dollar spot. Mm-hmm. And those that are just ritualistically irrigated, rain or not, neither or not, are the ones that are subjected to it. So that's it. I'm dollar spot.
Okay.
And typically, low nitrogen and potassium levels in the soil increase the severity of dollar spot too.
And speaking of dollar spots, it's time to make a dollar.
Yeah,
we got to take a little commercial break.
Okay.
Right here on the Green Country Gardener program, a different kind of green, if you know what I mean.
Okay, guys.
And we'll be back after this 2 minute timeout.
For great bargains of the month, shop Peter's True Value in Dewey. Save on Rubbermaid lightweight aluminum step stool, just $29.99. And keep those insects at bay with Raid Value Packs of 2 cans of ant and roach killer or 2 cans of wasp and hornet killer. Your choice, just $7.99 after a $2 instant in-store rebate. And for cleaning and disinfecting patios, get Clorox 121 ounces outdoor bleach for just $6.49. But only at Peter's True Value in Dewey.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
Wake up and text. Text and eat.
Mm-mm.
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger, put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit stoptextsstoprex.org. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council. Here we go.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. And Larry Glass, our expert. I'm Tom Davis. I just answer the phone around here and just kind of be obnoxious normally. It's 1-800-749-5936. Larry, where are we going right now? We've been talking about the dollar spots.
Right. Yeah. I think this microphone, there's a knot in it. Yeah. Perhaps that's why it's not working very well. But anyway, yeah, we talked about that. Other lawn diseases, I don't know, you can have some on your zoysia grass. We can have a little bit of rust on that right now, too.
Yeah.
Rust is when you mow it, you get this cloud of brown. It's a fungus.
I've seen that. Yeah. It's like, where did that come from?
Yeah, and usually iron sulfate will get rid of that. Mm-hmm. So it'll also make the grass greener, too. So.
Well, your grass is getting green up in Montgomery County in Kansas right now. Like,
yeah, I saw that on there. The whole county just covered in rain.
With the Jiminy
Christmas.
Storm, yeah.
Well, geez.
Yeah.
That's a mess.
They won't be seeing any dust when they
go right
now.
Is this July
now.
Or what?
Yeah,
what do you think, July?
March.
It's almost August. Come on. What's the matter with you people?
Got a hitch in the get-along, man.
Okay. Hardy hibiscus.
Hardy hibiscus.
Our hardy hibiscus at the nursery are beginning to bloom right now. We have several colors available, primarily pink and red. A lot of pink, a lot of red. They really haven't been able to breed any orange or anything into it yet, but they'll get there, believe me. But anyway, unlike any other flower in the garden, the hardy hibiscus offers us flowers that are both great big. You know, these big old flowers, big as, big around,
as two hands.
As your open hand.
As your open hand, okay.
They're pretty big flowers. Yeah. They're quite showy. And the newer varieties just bloom, and they keep blooming. They bloom, they keep putting on flowers. And so, in the past, typically, they'll bloom for, a week.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got them now to bloom from, about a week ago in perpetuity until it freezes.
Wow, that's a lot
so
of bloom.
Cool, yeah. Huh? And they get fairly good size, too. So you want to use them in the back of the landscape, in the composition as a backdrop plant. Or, say, up against a wall that... has a contrasting color. In other words, you wouldn't want to use a light color against a white wall or something, but like a white wall, you might want to go with the dark red ones and so on. You want to contrast it real sharply so you'll be able to see them. They do look good with a vegetative backdrop too.
Cool.
But anyway, the flowers range from 3 to 4 inches across to anywhere from 8 to 12 inches, and that really can depend on your soil type, the amount of fertility in the soil, the amount of sunshine, and the drainage too.
There you go.
I found these plants also to resistant to a lot of insects, with the exception maybe of grasshoppers. But you don't see very many bugs on them.
Cool.
So they are related to hibiscus, which is they're related to cotton, which is related to hibiscus, okra. So it's all kind of the same family.
They've got some interesting cousins.
Yeah, good. Good old plate of fried okra. Anyway, botanically, these plants are hibiscus mochetos. They are native to marshy areas of North America, and sometimes they can go by the common name mallow. Rose mallow is another word for them, too. And they are close relatives to the Rosa Sharon. And so they're very heat tolerant, very easy to grow, very kind of insect resistant. You can get a few worms on them now and then, but they don't seem to bother them that much.
Oh.
So anyway, we've used them for specimen interest in the landscape, and they do give you quite a really nice, long-lasting surprise in the landscape, too. So anyway, we have a lot of perennials at the nursery right now.
What kind?
Oh, yeah, we got them. The monarch butterflies just love the nursery. We get a lot of visitors over there because we have so many plants that, that the lantanas and stuff that they're attracted to. So come by and check it out, and you might even see some butterflies occasionally, too.
They're quite cool.
Exactly. And then we can do a landscape design for you also that will incorporate some of these, perhaps in a sunny area, maybe in a bed out in the garden, out in the yard somewhere. A butterfly garden has to be fairly large for it to really attract them. because they're just kind of fluttering around, and they have to see something. And when you're in the will of the wind, you know, it makes it difficult to target something. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so a good size garden.
There you go.
We're really bringing them in. That's probably why they like the nursery so much, is that they
got a lot going on out there.
There's a lot of things over there too. So hummingbirds are out right now, if you've seen them. We've got the 5 hummingbird feeders in our backyard, and it's like O'Hare Airport back there. So a lot of them over there too. So what else is going on at the nursery? We talk about planting your landscape, hummingbirds and all that, and variegation on plants. Why do plants have variegated leaves?
Why do they?
Well, the variegation, or chimeras are called, with more than one type of genetic makeup in the tissue. In other words, the chlorophyll is either absent or a different color in the variegation. And a lack of chlorophyll producing is what causes the variegation.
Mm-hmm.
So all these plants we really like that are variegated, they're really kind of sick.
Kind of thirsty, yeah.
Yes. Then there's several types of variegation depending on the tissues which have been affected. There's viral variegation, and there's a genetic variegation, venal variegation, and so on. Mm-hmm. So some of it is caused by a virus disease, and those are characterized by irregular patterns in the variegation in the leaf. In other words, no two leaves are exactly alike on a viral variegation plant. And this would be like philodendrons, for instance, have that characteristic where you have these irregularly shaped variegations on them, and the leaves don't look the same. And then there's a genetic variation, which, say, the variegated privet is an example of that. Every leaf has a very similar pattern to the variegation on the leaf, and that's a genetic-type variegation. So it does create some interest in some plants, and it makes a kind of a typically useless plant, like a privet plant, desirable in the landscape.
Oh, there you go.
And they have come up with a variegated, but not necessarily variegated, but a different colored of a privet plant called the golden privet. And it has these brightly colored leaves in the summertime. It looks like forsythia in bloom. They're so bright yellow in the full sun. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a variegation, it's just a leaf color. And they're really quite attractive, and they're very easy to grow. Mm-hmm. And they make a good show in the landscape. There are some cases here in town where they've used these plants, and they've been very attractive in the landscape. And they do share the traits of other forms of privet, in that they're extremely easy to grow, very disease and insect resistant.
Mm-hmm.
But this one in particular does not have the ability to make seeds.
Hmm.
So they're, we call them mules.
Understood.
They're sterile.
Got it.
They're
sterile. They're not going to reproduce. Yeah.
So you don't have to have all these privets all over the plant.
They're going
to
be fixed.
But this also is a dwarf one, too. Uh-huh. It's kind of small. Uh-huh. So if you have a really bright, sunny spot where you want just a big splash of yellow, this particular one will work very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's it with variegation.
All righty, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more in just a moment here with the Green Country Gardener Program. And, of course, your calls are always welcome at 1-800-749-5936. Back after this 2-minute timeout.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters with Bartlesville's largest selection of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants. Green Thumb can custom design your landscape, including installation of sprinkler systems, pavers for walkways and patios, making your yard and backyard the oasis you've always dreamed of. That's Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nawata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. Sunday, noon to 5.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house, and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up,
I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm fleece on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
I want to be a bike that races around the country.
I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
I want to be a rocking chair on a sunny skyscraper.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
I hopped up the plane at LAX with a dream, my cardigan.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome, welcome, welcome. It's a soggy Saturday. Hey, what's new, Larry Glass, right?
Hey, new.
Are
we talking about variegation and all that?
You're right here on the Green Country Gardener
exactly,
program. We
yeah.
were.
And we'll talk about the tree of the week, which is red maple.
Hello, red maple.
Red maple incorporates a wide variety of maples. There's and hybrids of red maple, too. Mm-hmm. The generic red maple has kind of unreliable fall color. It could be yellow or orange, but not really red. So we really like that red fall color. Mm-hmm. And the red maple is very tolerant of our conditions. It's typically it's a bottomland tree. In some areas, it's called a swamp maple because it does tolerate the wet areas.
Mm-hmm.
If you go, whenever we make trips to Florida or something, when the wife is driving the car, I'll look out and make notes of the vegetation and where its indigenous is. Mm-hmm. And the red maples are always in the lowland areas.
They are.
And however, they are very tolerant of our weather conditions and our soil conditions and our variations in soil here, too. Case in point would be my front yard, which is basically just, you can't dig a hole in the ground, even 6 inches, without hitting solid rock.
Right.
When we had those winds that came through a couple years ago that blew all the trees everywhere.
Yeah.
Mine were just fine because they're so anchored into the rock.
They got a rock base on the root.
I mean, they're uprooted trees everywhere, but it wasn't even a broken twig anywhere.
Solid
Because
the
main reason is there wasn't any damage is because they grow more slowly. If they're under a little bit of stress like that, they don't grow so fast.
Uh-huh.
So they're a bit stronger. And these trees, the trees in my yard aren't as big as, say, as you go down the street where there's more soil. Say around Kevin's house, he's got all my dirt.
Yeah, it slid down the road,
and all I get is his dandelions. But nonetheless, down there, they tend to grow a little faster, a little taller. So climatic and cultural variations can affect how big a tree gets and how tall it gets and how fast it grows and so on. So its growth rate is somewhat tempered by the cold, so the wood is a little bit stronger. So anyway, but red maple generally is a very good tree. It's very favorable in the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Its root depth is kind of medium. It's not really the deepest root, but it can be kind of shallow root. It's definitely, especially if you're in rock. Had to put beds around the trees too because the grass wouldn't grow and the mower kept getting stuck. So got some boulders and made some pretty beds around the maple trees.
There you go.
But anyway, so they're valued primarily for their fall color, and they're really showy. And I think this year, with all the rain we're having, and depending on the weather in the fall, we're going to have a really good show of red on the red maples this year.
Mm-hmm.
So you might consider that in the landscape. And for a shade tree, perhaps. They're fairly clean tree, with the exception of the little twirly gigs.
Those things.
The little helicopters.
Yeah, the kids love them. Me, not so much.
The red maple has a small one, about maybe the size of your pinky finger or something. But the silver maple have
big size jobs.
And also, the bark is pretty similar from the red maple to the silver maple, but the older bark on both of them is somewhat striated too, but typically the silver maple has a more smoother bark and a longer internode. So anyway, so the red maple is a good tree to have as a shade tree or specimen tree, but keep it away from sewer lines.
please.
And keep it away from drainage patterns.
Please.
Because they are shallow rooted and they will raise the soil level up and cause the issues with drainage.
And also, you don't want those kind of issues, folks. You don't.
Yeah. And if you're having a sprinkler system installed in a new house and you want to put maples or red maples in the yard, any kind of tree in the yard, make sure that the installer puts the main lines either close to the house or far away, not in the center of the yard. I don't know how many trees I've planted. We dug a big old nice hole, then clunk. Oh, no.
Oh.
And you got to move the tree over a little bit. So you...
Whoops.
So, and when I do an irrigation design, I'd keep the main line out away from the middle of the yard, too, off to the side. So,
you ever notice when you hear that clunk, you've never really struck gold?
Yeah, or no. it's under pressure and water comes up everywhere.
Found it.
So anyway, the point I'm making is that they need a bit of room. You don't want to plant them too close to the house.
Okay.
They need a room to grow. They get 30 feet wide or so. So we always say 15 feet away from the house and 15 feet away from pavement on these trees and 15 feet away from the drainage swales going around the house. Because I've seen it so many times where they plant a tree right in the drainage swale and then they got water in the house. Because the house was built 6 inches too low. There's not enough slope. And it causes the water to back up because it doesn't drain out.
Not good.
I see that so many times. And it's good for the French drain business, I guess. So anyway, red maples, very easy to establish, very easy to get. They're available in all kinds of colors, sizes, and varieties. So it's very easy to get a tree also.
Very good.
So... Keep in mind those few rules when planting them.
All right. We're going to take a quick break because we have to. And we're going to be right back with more of the Green Country Gardener program right here after this 2-minute, 15-second timeout.
From the time Frank Phillips completed his magnificent lodge home at Woolah Rock in 1925 until Jane's death in 1948, they entertained the rich and the famous from all over the world. Their guests included wealthy business legends such as John D. Rockefeller and Henry Sinclair, politicians such as President Harry Truman and President Herbert Hoover, entertainers Rudy Vallee, Will Rogers, and Rubinoff, famous authors such as Edna Ferber, pilot Wiley Post, Elliot Roosevelt, son of President Roosevelt. The list goes on and on. As we look back on the parties and the stories and the deals that were being done at the lodge, we realize that it truly was the Great Gatsby of the Midwest. To most of Frank's guests who were visiting from the East or West Coast, and many times from Europe, they were truly seeing a glimpse of the Wild West that they had heard so much about. While in fact that era was long over by then, Frank Phillips loved the history and wanted to do everything he could to make sure that his guests received their money's worth during their visit to his lodge and to Woolah Rock. With that in mind, it was not unusual for a carload of his guests to arrive at the gates of Woolah Rock in their large black sedans and be stopped by masked bandits on horseback, taken from their cars and robbed of their wallets, jewelry, and purses, and then sent on their way by the thieves. What those guests didn't realize is that these were employees of Frank's who hurried back to the lodge on horseback, arriving well ahead of the cars. When the guests arrived at the lodge and burst into the house, telling their wild and terrifying story to Frank, he would smile and point to the table in the living room where the stolen loot was on display, compliments of Uncle Frank. Once their blood pressure had returned to normal, they too enjoyed Frank's welcome to the ranch joke. They came to see the Wild West, and Frank Phillips obliged in true Oklahoma fashion, and they left Woolah Rock with stories that likely got bigger and bigger and bigger over the years. That same magic continues still today at this national treasure. Welcome home to Woolah Rock.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener program. Sorry about your luck if you're in today in Kansas. Water's coming down hard right about now.
Yeah, it looks like it's getting ready to hit sea, Dan. There's one coming down there.
Yes, indeed. Checking the radar.
I know, right north of Washington County, too, there's a big old slug of rain up there also. So anyway, It's July in Oklahoma. What do you expect?
Well, I don't know. I've lived here for 2 years, and I've been told this is not typical. Every day since I've been here, this is not typical.
Back in 1978, I was working summers here, helping building houses with a construction company here in town. And it was 100 degrees for 103 days, over 100 degrees in a row. No clouds, no wind. Yeah, some of the old-timers will
that'll that. Cook you.
Well, I was only 21 years old. So
you could take that. That's no big deal.
Just went on with it. No problems at all.
Yeah, pass the jug of tea. Let's keep moving. Yeah.
But anyway, we're very lucky right now. We haven't hit 100 yet this year.
Nope.
We didn't do it last year either. Squeaked. Just barely squeaked. Mm-hmm. I know the heat index has been really high, but we haven't hit the actual 100 degrees yet.
Surface temperature, yeah.
Cool. Literally. Okay. Shrub of the week would be Akuba.
Okay.
Akuba. This plant has almost a tropical appearance to it. Mm-hmm. And it really was surprising this winter in that some of the Akubas were unaffected by the cold. Mm-hmm. And typically they're hardy in a region south of us. But a lot of them made it just fine. Even the ones we had in containers at the nursery. They leaped out again. They're a little damaged here and there. We turned it back, and they leaped out again. Mm-hmm. So this is a weird plant in that it can be warmer in the winter, mm-hmm. but it'll just wipe them out. It turns them into this mush.
Yeah.
But I guess you never know. But anyway, Akuba has variegated leaves.
Uh-huh.
The most popular one is called Gold Dust Akuba. And this plant is interesting in that you think it'll grow in the shade, but it does need a bit more sun than you think. Mm-hmm. So a splash of direct sun during the day sometime would be best for this particular plant. And good drainage and very loose soil.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very fragile, I guess if you will, root system on it. And it doesn't really punch through heavy soil very well. So you really have to do your ground prep on this one to make sure it'll do quite well. And it does very well stay close to a structure, maybe on the east or the north side of the house, in an open environment like that. Mm-hmm. And it'll do just fine. So the house next door to me, the neighbors, they know nothing about plants, but they have this really nice Akuba plant.
He's here.
Absolutely nothing about it. And they're doing just fine. So and then you go through all the trouble to plant these Akuba plants, and mm-hmm. they die. So.
Oh.
I guess you just have to ignore them for them to do well.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's another plant that you might consider using in the landscape for some interesting specimen interest, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because of the fairly large leaf and the leaf variegation. It does very well as a kind of a backdrop plant, maybe with something fine textured in front of it, even some hostas in front of it, but might compete with it a little bit. But I sort of like to use a fine textured plant, such as a liriope or something mm-hmm. in front of it. To give it a textural contrast. It's a pretty good plant. Easy to grow once it's established. I really don't know of any insect problems that it has. The only problem it might have would be some occasional stem rot. But other than that, it's a pretty good plant to have. So Akuba, we've got a few at the nursery to look at. We also have some hydrangeas too, some very hardy type hydrangeas that bloom despite the heat or the sun. So yeah.
That's good.
I might get one of those to replace that one that's bloomed twice in 16 years. So,
like that was loafing a little bit.
It really is. Come on, geez. All this water, you even in the rain, it doesn't bloom.
All I ask, a little blooming.
You prep the soil real good. You turn it over. You put all this stuff in it to make it loose. And it just kind of sits there and laughs.
At least you can do a show-up hydrangea.
Like a disobedient dog, you know.
Doing it just to spite
you. But anyway, come by the nursery, check out what we got. We got all kinds of color right now. Some annuals, really, and some hanging baskets even. And some pretty color pots and all of it. And by all means, keep your shovel sharp. We will see you next week.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.